and welcome to Bixis Alive, the radio program in cyberspace dedicated to the preservation and dissemination of the musical legacy of Bix Beiderbecke, the jazz genius from Davenport, Iowa. I am Albert Haim, and this is WBIX, the virtual radio station on demand of the Bixography website. In the Bixis Alive program, I will play recordings and talk about the music and the life of Bix Beiderbecke. I will also play recordings by other musicians, past and present, who play in a style influenced and or reminiscent of Bix's unique approach to music. In the programs, I will feature various segments. In some instances, I will have a battle of the bands. On other occasions, I will focus on one particular musician or a theme as the centerpiece of the program. At other times, I will simply play recordings that I enjoy. Since we have been talking and discussing quite extensively clarinet players in the Bixography Forum, and I devoted the last WBIX program to Don Murray and Pee-wee Russell, I thought I would continue today with another clarinetist. The centerpiece of today's program will be Frank Teschmacher. I will also have a tribute to Bix in the form of a composition by Randy Sankey. Well, let's talk a little bit about Teschmacher. Tesh, as he was known, was born on March 13, 1906, in Kansas City, Missouri. The family moved to Chicago when he was six, into Austin, a middle-class suburb in the West Side. Tesh first learned piano, and then he changed to banjo. When Tesh was 14, he bought a saxophone. By the time Tesh entered Austin High School in 1921, he could play violin, banjo, and saxophone. He was fascinated with music, as were some of his high school mates, Jim Lanigan, Jimmy and Dick McPartland, and Bud Friedman. These youngsters were particularly taken by the New Orleans Rhythm Kings. They practiced every day with Jim Lanigan on piano, Jimmy McPartland on cornet, Dick McPartland on the banjo, Bud Friedman on the C melody sax, and Tesh on violin. Eventually, Davy Toff joined them on drums and Dave North on piano. At that point, Lanigan switched to tuba, and thus the Austin High Gang was born, although at the time they called themselves the Blue Friars. They were known among jazz musicians as the Wild West Side Mob. They attracted other youngsters, and particularly I would like to mention Benny Goodman. Tesh took up the clarinet in 1924. In addition to the influence of the New Orleans Rhythm Kings, the Austin High came under the influence of Bix Beiderbecke through his recordings with the Wolverines. Well, let's get started with the music. Time Life Records devoted one of its sets in the Giants of Jazz series to Tesh. The set includes all 34 known recordings by Tesh, and six more by jazz clarinetists who sound a little bit like Tesh, such as Maury Berkoff, Fud Livingston, Bud Jacobson, and Pee-wee Russell. I'd like to start the music with a couple of recordings from this very beautiful set. There is a booklet also included in the set. It has biographical information and comments about the recordings. These are written by Marty Gross. All right. First, I'll have Nobody's Sweetheart. This was recorded by Charles Peirce and his orchestra in April of 1928. The composition of the orchestra is Moxie Spanier on cornet, Jack Reed on trombone, Frank Teschmacher on clarinet and alto sax, Charles Peirce on alto sax, Ralph Rutter on tenor sax, Dan Lipscomb, on piano, Stuart Branch on banjo, Johnny Muller on brass bass and string bass, Paul Kettler on drums. This will be followed immediately by a recording of Jazz Me Blues. This is assigned to Frank Teschmacher's Chicagoans. The recording was made in April of 1928, but was first issued on United Hot Clubs of America in May of 1939. The composition of the band is Frank Teschmacher on clarinet and alto saxophone, Rod Class on alto saxophone, Milt Mezirov on tenor saxophone, Joe Sullivan on piano, Eddie Condon on banjo, Jim Lanigan on bass, and Gene Krupa on drums. So let's listen to Frank Teschmacher in a couple of recordings from April of 1928, Nobody's Sweetheart and The Blues. Thank you. Mitesh was all over that recording of Jazz Me Blues. He wrote the arrangement, he led the band, he took most of the solos, doubling on alto sax and clarinet. I would like to read now from another LP. This is a Jazz Heritage Series LP entitled The Chicagoans, The Austin High Gang, 1928-1930. The liners are written by George Hofer, and he makes a comparison between Bix and Tesh. And I read now, there are several similarities that come to mind in comparing the tragic careers of Bix Beiderbecke and Teschmacher. Both men came from well-to-do families with a German heritage. They both lived music and were creative improvisers. Both were comparatively quiet and somewhat philosophical. Tesch was fond of Holst's The Planets, while Bix favored Debussy and Eastwood Lane's Adirondack Sketches. The last several years of both men's careers were spent playing in commercial dance orchestras. Finally, both artists died young. Tesch was almost 27, Bix was 28. Well, let's continue with the music. I would like to play now Oh Baby by the Eddie Condon's Quartet. This was recorded in July 28, 1928, with Tesch on clarinet and alto sax, Joe Sullivan on piano, Eddie Condon on banjo and vocal, Gene Krupa on drums. I will follow that with a recording by Joe Wingy Manone and his Club Royale Orchestra. This is Trying to Stop My Crying, recorded on December 17, 1928, with Wingy Manone on cornet and vocal, Tesch on clarinet, George Snurpus on tenor saxophone, Art Hodes on piano, Ray Biondi on guitar, Augie Shelange on drums. So here is Tesch, first with the Eddie Condon's Quartet, and then with the Joe Wingy Manone and his Club Royal Orchestra in 1928.
stop my crying, because my dreaming will not come true. Trying to stop my sighing, and even trying someone new. Your heart was never meant for me, so why should I ask your sympathy? That's why I'm trying to stop my crying, because I can't stop my loving you.
The question as to whether Tesh was a genius or couldn't play in tune has been discussed several times. I would like to read a couple of extracts from two sources. First, I will read from the Jazz Heritage series, The Chicagoans, the Austin High Gang, 1928-1930, liners by George Hofer. And he says, Teschmacher, whose name has been on the verge of complete oblivion, was the most musically creative of the Chicagoans. In a strange way, the difficulty that Ornette Coleman, Arthur Shepp, and John Coltrane had in finding recognition for their innovations has been a situation that Teschmacher also knew about almost 55 years ago. Tesch was reprimanded for playing off the diatonic scale, for having poor intonation, and some listeners vowed that he just couldn't play the clarinet. There were others, mostly musicians, who played in the same bands who felt a great deal differently. Like one colleague in a commercial dance band, whose name is now lost, once recalled, Tesh's playing was breathtaking. He would often shout in delight when he'd hit a particularly outlandish lick or phrase because it sounded so right when he did it. I would also like to read from an article written by a D. Leon Wolf. Remember that name, D. Leon Wolf, on June 1, 1941, for Downbeat. The article is entitled Bix Half Baked, Johnny Dodds Corny, Tesh Out of Tune. There are photographs of Bix, Tesh, and Johnny Dodds on the page. And under the photographs, there is a sort of an abstract of what Wolf is saying. And it reads, Wolf deprecates the lunatic fringe of critics, collectors, and precocious brats in knee pants, whose favorite trick is to puff certain second-rate all-time musicians, most of them dead or out of tune, or both. Let me read also the specific section about Tesh. It has the subtitle, Tesh's Seven Flattest Notes. To a certain person named Quinn Lisk, who writes in Jazz Information, that those who deprecate the Teschmachers only display their own lack of an ear for real jazz music, I dedicate the seven notes Tesh repeats near the end of his solo on Mackenzie Condon's Chicagoan's China Boy, the seven flattest notes in the hit jazz, but nothing very unusual for our good old Tesh. Well, I'll play the recording of China Boy by Mackenzie Condon's Chicagoans, and I'll let you decide whether those are the seven flattest notes in the history of jazz or whether this D. Leon Wolf is full of you-know-what. China Boy was recorded on December 9, 1927 by Red McKenzie as director, Jimmy McPartland on cornet, Frank Teschmacher on clarinet, Bud Freeman on tenor saxophone, Joe Sullivan on piano, Eddie Condon on lute, that's what the liner says, Jim Lanigan on the string bass, and Gene Krupa on drums. So here is China Boy by McKenzie and Condon's Chicagoans. Are those the seven flattest notes in the history of jazz? If you have any strong opinions on this question, maybe you'd like to start a thread in the Bixography forum. Well, let's turn from Dasht to Randy Sankey. I have an LP entitled The New York Stories, recorded on May 30 and 31st, 1985, by Randy Sankey with Michael Breckert, Joel Heleny, Jim McNeely, John Goldsby, and Kenny Washington. And one of the sides on this LP is entitled Bix's Place. And the liners, written by Randy Sankey, read as follows. When we were kids, my brother and I once had a conversation about ghosts. Jordan, who started me on the trumpet, was trying to allay my fears, and his reasoning went something like this. If ghosts don't exist, then there's nothing to be scared of. But if they do, then Bix is still around somewhere. Bix is, of course, Bix Beiderbecke, the great jazz cornetist who died tragically in 1931 at the age of 28. Recently, I asked Benny Goodman whether he would have hired Bix for his big band in the 30s if Bix had lived. It's almost impossible to imagine, but Bix would have been a mere 35 at the time of the Carnegie Hall concert and only 56 when Coltrane recorded Giant Steps. Benny's answer was, would Bix have hired me? Last New Year's Eve, I was on my way to work at the Harvard Club when I passed the old 44th Street Hotel, which was Bix's home during the 20s. A sign out front advertised, special day rates. So I figured I finally had a chance to pay my respects to room 605. On our first break, Jim Masters, Jerry Newwood, and I sidestepped hordes of drunken revelers and lied our way past police barricades to get to the lobby of the hotel. There, the night clerk blandly informed us that the building had been sold and was to close that very night at midnight. It would be gutted and turned into office space. Our pilgrimage failed to impress him, and we were forbidden from going upstairs. The next day, I called a friend in the salvaging business in a desperate attempt to save the bathtub that Big slept in and the sink he got sick in. However, a later call to Dick Sotholder, who wrote the definitive biography of Bix, revealed that room 605 had undergone renovation many times since Bix's day, and there was nothing left he would have requested. And so Bix remains ever elusive, a ghost perhaps, but one whose music is still unsurpassed. Well, let's listen then to the composition by Randy Sankey entitled Bix's Place. This is 5 minutes of music, not in the style of the 1920s, I warn you. Thank you. I would like to play now one side which has a possible Teschmacher as the clarinet player in it. The question of authentic versus apocryphal musicians in given recordings is one that has been around for a long time. We all know, for example, about Do Wakadu by Marion Mackay. Is it Bix or is it not? Of course, we know now for certain that it is not Bix. It was Leroy Morris who recorded that side. But there are several instances of recordings which are controversial, and some people, well-known people, believe that it is, for example, Bix. Others believe that it is not Bix. A recent example of that is a very interesting and powerful analysis by Brad Kay of Cradle of Love, recorded by Ray Miller. Is it a Bix or is it not? Well, those of you who have not had a chance to listen to Cradle of Love will have soon, I understand, from Hans Eckhoff, that Timeless is about to issue a Ray Miller CD, which will include, or includes, in fact, the two takes of Cradle of Love. They are hard working on finding the third take of that. Well, this question then of apocryphal versus authentic was discussed in this Giants of Jazz set of LPs on Teschmacher, and I'll read what it says here. Recording sessions during the late 20s and early 30s were often casual affairs at which nobody kept close track of who played what or even bothered to list all of the sidemen. The name of the leader or the contractor might get on the record label, but the record might also be credited to some other leader, real or mythical, and record companies were notoriously inaccurate in setting down the dates and places of sessions. This has led to discographies liberally sprinkled with unknowns and question marks, and has encouraged Teschmacher enthusiasts to trust their ears more than record labels. Of course, this also applies to Bix's recordings. Well, they did this in a fairly systematic fashion. They had a bunch of consultants, all well-known musicians, collectors, jazz authorities in general, and they looked at a bunch of recordings, and they ended up with the six most likely ones. And among those, some are more likely than others, and I will play one of them. This is Dear Old Southland by the original Wolverines. This was recorded on May 24, 1928, and the composition given here is Unknown Cornet, Mike Dorso, trombone, unknown clarinet, alto saxophone, unknown tenor saxophone, Dick Voino, piano, director, unknown guitar, Basil Dupre, bass, Vic Moore, drums. Well, two of the names here are known to most of you, I imagine, as being members of the original Wolverines. I don't mean the original Wolverines as a name for a label, but the original Wolverines from 1924. Anyway, let me tell you the way that the experts voted on this. The ones that thought Tash was actually playing in this recording were Kenny Davern, Warren Plath, Jess Stacy, Marty Gross, Bud Freeman, Frank Powers, Hall Smith, Jim Gordon, Paul Burgess, and Howard Waters. The maybes were Michael Brooks, Frank Chance, and John Steiner. The nays were Jimmy McPartland, Artie Shaw, Dick Sodhalter, Frank Gillis, Brian Ross, John R.T. Davis, Vladimir Simovsky, and Warren Plath. So it is not only in the question as to whether it is Don Murray or Pee Wee Russell who plays in A Good Man Is Hard to Find that the experts split. Anyway, so here are the new Wolverines, with or without Teschmacher. What do you think? If you would like me to upload a few more of these controversial text markers, please send me a message. Well, let's get back to Bix now. We have come to the end of today's edition of Bix is Alive, the radio program in cyberspace dedicated to the preservation and the musical legacy of Bix Beiderbecke, the jazz genius from Davenport, Iowa. Please join me again in 2 weeks over WBIX, the virtual radio station on demand of the Bixography website, for another edition of the program. Until then, this is Albert Haim saying, through his music, Bix is alive.